Joanna Weeb here from Copy Hackers. I have with me today, very excited about it, Kate Kiefer-Lee from Mailchimp, and we are going to be talking a lot about tone. So welcome, Kate. Happy to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me. This is awesome. So can you tell me a bit about what you do at Mailchimp, or tell people who are listening what you do at Mailchimp?
Sure. So I've been here coming up on 3.5 years, and I'm a writer, editor, and publisher here. So some days that means I'm copywriting all day. Some days it means assigning and scheduling and editing blog posts. And some days it means working across departments on our voice and tone and stuff like that.
Very nice. That's exciting. Now, one of the big reasons, I mean, there's lots of reasons to want to talk to you, but one of the big ones is because honestly, whenever anybody talks to me about using tone for their startup, they always, without fail, always, I wait for it as they're talking to me. Like, I wait for them to say MailChimp, and without fail, they do.
Oh, that's good. Good to hear.
Yeah. So I'm really stoked about talking to you about it. And I'd kind of like to dive right into some questions that I'm pretty sure people who read Copy Hackers have because they've asked them to me so many times. Now, I mean, this is kind of the technical side of it before we dive right in, but is there, would you say there's a distinction between tone and voice? Does it matter? Do we have to think about the difference between tone and voice?
So people sometimes use those words and tone interchangeably, but they're really not the same thing. Voice is more about our personality and perspective and who we are, and it pretty much stays the same from day to day, though it does adapt over time, of course. But our tone of voice changes all the time, depending on the situation and depending on our readers and what's going on with them. So tone is more about mood, and in a way, it's a response to our readers' feelings. So I think the easiest way to explain it is in the context of our actual human voices and face-to-face conversations. You probably have the same voice all the time, but your tone adapts. You might use one when you're talking to a close friend and another tone completely with your boss. Or you might have a playful tone at a birthday party or a more casual place and a more formal or serious tone in a business meeting. So there's very much a difference, and our tone is changing all the time while our voice isn't.
So I love that. I love the way you've explained it. It's super clear. But I wonder, like, if your tone changes a lot at MailChimp, your voice stays the same, your tone changes, what do you think the tone is that people connect with so much when they think about MailChimp? What is that tone? Do you have a sense for it?
Well, so tone is really about empathy, and it kind of comes down to being nice. So
Oh.
I think people connect with that, you know, the fact that we try to think about our users and our readers' feelings before we write content. And then a lot of that is people connecting with our personality and our voice, which generally stays the same, but that is kind of in the fiber of our content, our voices.
I like that it's about empathy, and just being nice, I think you said too, right? I mean, that alone, it often feels to me like, tone people think is something they have to, work really hard at. But would you say you have to work, how much work do you have to put into tone? To me, it feels like if you can just be authentically nice, then that will come through in your copy.
I think, well, that's a great question. And I think that empathy does come naturally in face-to-face conversations. So if we can kind of get ourselves in a conversational frame of mind by reading our work out loud and thinking about the people at the other end of our content, then yeah, it does come more naturally that way.
Okay.
But it doesn't always come naturally in our writing, which is why I think it's so important to create voice and tone guides for writers and people around the office, anyone who communicates on behalf of the company, because it's a good training tool to help people write more empathetically.
Right. And you have been at MailChimp, you guys are very open about tone and voice. You publish your editorial style guide online, and there'll be a link to it in this post. Why are you so transparent? Why are you so open about sharing out your own editorial style guide? Is there a reason for that?
Well, there is. It's because when I was working on that guide with our team here at Mailchimp, I realized people aren't really talking about this stuff, and a lot of companies really miss the mark when it comes to tone of voice. So we just made it public in case it could help other companies, because we really like to share our knowledge at MailChimp. We like to show our work and let people know what we're working on and kind of how we come to the conclusions that we've come to. And it was just a part of that.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, even looking at the document, like I know it's housed online, but even looking at it, it's clear that not only have you put a lot of thought into it, but you continue to invest energy into it. So I start to wonder, okay, MailChimp is this really successful business. They are, you know, you're running an actual business. Investing time in things is something you have to usually make a business case for. So why do you guys invest so much into so much of what you have, your resources, into developing that tone? Is there perhaps some sort of business payoff that you guys have? Is there something you guys know about tone that people could learn from here and how it helps maybe your business grow, if at all?
People ask me a lot about the business value of voice and tone, and it's a little bit of a tricky question because this kind of work is so meaningful, but it's not really something you can easily measure with overnight analytics or assign numbers to. I think that investing in voice and tone makes readers and customers more engaged with your content and more loyal to your company. I think it makes them want to tell their friends about you and share your company with people. But those are the kinds of slow changes that you tend to see over time. So yes, there is value, but it's not something I think you can just kind of print out on a spreadsheet. And I feel like I should add, too, that watching your tone and considering your reader's feelings, like I said before, is about empathy. It really comes down to being nice. Mm-hmm. So sales and, you know, business value aside, it's just the right thing to do. And in the long run, that's better for everybody.
And obviously, when you solve for customers, you're ultimately solving for employees and shareholders too. And if that's what you're doing here with tone, right, is really being nice to your customers, then you're solving for all three stakeholders just by, you know, communicating well with them. Interesting point. Now, that said, you guys obviously create a lot of content, but not all of your content is what I would call, I guess, quote-unquote, tonal, right? There's not, it's not always like this Freddy voice coming through all over the place. So what media do you make tonal, or what channels are more tonal? Do you guys have a sense for where you should be really nice and where you should be, let's say, maybe really clearer, or how far to go with tone in certain places?
That's an interesting question. So first of all, I'd say that everything we write has a tone of voice. It's okay. Just not always the one we intended. So tone isn't really something that you add to your copy. Mm-hmm. It's always there, and it's often changing. So if you're talking about a more playful and lighthearted tone, for example, a good rule of thumb is to keep that stuff to positive good news messages. That might mean success messages or marketing copy or social media. Anytime your customers are feeling happy or you have the chance to make them happy, then that's a good place for playfulness and a more lighthearted tone. Mm. So, for example, we're especially playful in our success messages when a customer sends an email campaign because they're usually feeling pretty good at that point and we want to cheer them on. But we try to keep the jokes out of any kind of failure messages or anytime we're delivering bad news. So that might mean an error message, a negative account notification, a credit card decline message, or something like that. If your customers are likely to be feeling stressed or confused or angry or even embarrassed, then they don't really want to hear your jokes at that point. They want you to calmly and quickly tell them what's going on and how to fix a problem. So I think good news versus bad news is kind of a basic way to think about it.
That's such a great distinction. I have to say, I haven't heard it put that well before. I think it's really smart. I mean, I'm thinking about some experiences I've had where, you know, I was waiting for an application to load and waiting for something to load when you expect things to move quickly is not a good experience already to begin with, right? So we're just putting up with this kind of nuisance or this not pleasant user experience. And during it, it said, please hold on, our hamsters are turning their wheels or something like that. And not only was it kind of out of character for this particular business to use that sort of messaging, but it really felt like I don't know, I felt not offended by it, but I just didn't feel good about that. Like, I don't want to hear about your silly hamsters behind the scenes. I just want this page to load already. So I think it's interesting, and it actually it leads me to the next question that I have around if you've ever seen, and I know you've kind of already spoken to this, but I don't know, it might help just to have a final yes or no, but have you ever seen Tone interfere with a user experience, whether at MailChimp or somewhere else? Have you had a bad experience like that?
That's a good question, and it's hard to say if certain tones of voice have interfered specifically with user experience or people getting their work done, but I have an example of a place where our tone of voice actually offended a few of our customers. So when you log into MailChimp, we give you these updates in the dashboard on how your campaigns are performing. So for example, when someone unsubscribes from your email list, we let you know in the dashboard. And unsubscribes really aren't a huge deal. Everyone gets them, and the larger your list is, the more you're going to get. So we want to kind of normalize it for people, even though we do need to inform our customers when someone leaves their list. So we had a notification there for a while that said something like, you had a few people jump ship. Who needs them anyway? And we were trying to be nice. You know, it came from a good place. We wanted to tell people, listen, you have a few unsubscribes, but it's not really a big deal. It's okay. It happens all the time. But it ended up coming off as insensitive because saying who needs them anyway sends a message that we don't value our customers' readers. And of course, that's not true. So a few people wrote us about that, and they were absolutely right that we struck the wrong tone there. You know, and sometimes because we are so transparent about our voice and tone, sometimes people do write in about it because they know we really care. So we changed the notification, and now it says something like, these things happen for a number of reasons, but you might want to check out our tips for keeping a healthy list, and then we link to a help document from our knowledge base in case people want to act on it.
Actually, I use MailChimp. I love MailChimp, and I got those unsubscribe notifications. But yeah, I guess that's the difference between some users and others. I liked that when I saw that who needs them anyway, I felt the same way. I was like, oh, well, who needs them, right? Like, you try to tell yourself that so that you don't feel bad about yourself, right? Like, oh, man, they hated me. Oh, that was a terrible thing. I guess I suck, right? That kind of stuff that you worry about when people unsubscribe. It can help to kind of have, you know, the chimp or Freddy in your corner almost. But I get why people might be like, hey, that's not cool.
Yeah, and that's definitely where we were coming from, you know, when we wrote that message. And I think some people liked it, but yeah, Others didn't.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? You tried. So, I mean, everything you're saying, it sounds like developing or writing with certain tone of voice for different messages at different points in, you know, what a customer's going through, it comes really naturally to you, as it does, I would think, right? You're an experienced copywriter. This is what you do. Now, if I'm a startup founder and I'm writing my own copy and I want to find a tone, right, and I want to connect with people in kind of a way that MailChimp does, and maybe I'm thinking about tone and I'm worrying about it and trying to be like conscious of applying tone. Do you have any words of advice for people who are in that state? Like, I know a lot of what you've said will help them, but is there any real advice you could give to people who are trying to quote unquote craft a tone for their own copy?
That's a great question. And I think one great thing about this voice and tone stuff is that it's not about technical writing rules and regulations. You know, like we've talked about, it's about basic human empathy. So this is stuff anyone can do, whether you're a professional writer or, you know, someone else who writes, you know, during the course of your work. The best place, I think, to start when you're determining your tone is with the content type. And sometimes that gets you all the way there. So, for example, in our app, we have these jokes that our mascot makes, you know, when you log in. And in that case, all I need to know is that I'm writing a joke. All I need to know is that I'm saying something funny. I have to be entertaining to surprise and delight people there. And it's pretty easy to strike the right tone in those cases. The same's true for bad news messages. You know, that's when you need to be serious and calm and get right to the point. But sometimes there's gray area in between, and it's a little more complicated than that. And in those cases, you have to think about your reader's emotional state. Those specifics are going to depend on your company and your customers and the different types of situations you're dealing with. For example, if you write help documents, let's say, you might be writing for people who are in the middle of completing a task and they're troubleshooting. So they probably aren't going to appreciate too much humor or any distractions because they just need answers fast. Mm-hmm. But if you're writing a success message after someone has finished a task, then they're likely to be feeling happy or relieved or proud. And then you want to use language that encourages those happy feelings. You might be a little more casual and fun, you know, in those cases. So my advice is when you sit down to write a bit of copy, ask yourself questions like, who is reading this? How do they feel right now? And how is this message going to make them feel? And try to naturally adapt your tone in a way that feels right for you.
To me, I'm walking away with, at a, you know, high level, quick hit kind of thing outside of everything else I'm learning from you. You really are, it seems to me, breaking it down into good news versus bad news, task versus successful completion of task. And if you could, I guess if a startup could look at it that way and just simply ask themselves, is this, you know, obviously knowing what your customer is the best place to go, but starting at a point where you're like, okay, well, first of all, is this good news or bad news? If it's bad news in any way, no tonal or no heavy or overly friendly or whatever kind of tone applied. If it's good news, okay, we can get a little friendlier with that. If they're in the middle of a task, don't do anything crazy. If they're successfully completed the task, go to town if you feel like it.
Yeah, it gets more complicated than that, but I think that's a really great place to start for sure.
Right, as just a starting point for writing your own copy. Now, you did mention that Freddy, or your mascot, is the one that often gets to, like, tell a joke. And I know that he's kind of on the periphery, right? Like, when I'm creating an email in MailChimp, and I'm previewing it, and it's supposed to be just 600 pixels wide, and if it's wider when I preview it, his little arm breaks because he's, like, extending his arm 600 pixels or whatever. And also, he does those little, like, video, those YouTube snippets up in the top when you just sign in and you're looking at your dashboard. One, he's kind of on the outskirts of things, right? He's not in the middle of everything when I'm working on a task. And two, he's kind of, I don't know if there's something to the fact that he's a mascot. Do you think that having a mascot lets you get away with being a little friendlier sometimes than others? Or am I just making a big assumption?
No, that's interesting. So our mascot, Freddy, makes these jokes within our app that you mentioned. He sometimes links to a ridiculous YouTube video, or he says he likes your haircut or something. And that's pretty much the only place he has his own voice, the only place he speaks. Now, we definitely have playful content in lots of other places, so that sort of tone of voice isn't limited to Freddy. We do experiment, you know, with humor in lots of other places, but we have a whole lot of fun with Freddy. I'm not sure how much of a strategy there is behind that. I will say that we make it a point that Freddy does not say anything educational. He doesn't tell people about MailChimp. He doesn't tell people how to use the app. And that is intentional because we want people to associate positive feelings with Freddy. He's there for personality and entertainment and to make our customers smile when they're doing something that's not really always so fun. So if people are frustrated, you know, either with our app or they're in the middle of sending an email campaign and they're feeling stressed about it, Freddy isn't usually going to appear there. With the exception of that example you mentioned, which is kind of rare and I think a little bit of a legacy thing, but he generally doesn't get involved. And I do think that's part of the reason why our mascot is so loved and why people, you know, are willing and want to wear Freddy hats and Freddy shirts and, you know, things with his face on it. Yeah. So even though it's not, I don't think it's especially strategic, I do think it all plays into how people view MailChimp as a company and as a brand.
I have a question here from a reader about tone. So I'm wondering if you can help. So his name is Patrick, And he wrote and said, you know, my number one problem is sounding like generic sales copy. My customers are baby boomers, and when writing copy, I have trouble creating a tone that resonates with this target market. Should I bother with experimenting with tone? So he's writing for baby boomers. Can be a little bit difficult to, if you're not, you know, in that group that you're trying to message toward, it can be, I think, a little hard to land on the right, you know, voice and then experiment with tone maybe a bit. And when he asks if you should bother, I guess the big question there is, do you think that it's a worthwhile investment for someone like Patrick to spend a lot of time trying to find the right tone, or are there better uses of their, you know, time when they're writing their own copy, or is this a worthwhile investment?
Good question, Patrick. And I think that this question is actually about voice and tone. So I hear about this problem a lot, but here's the thing. I think that people of all ages and people in all different kinds of businesses and industries can appreciate a good personality and even a good sense of humor. It's just a matter of finding a balance that works for your company. So it's important to remember that your voice doesn't have to sound like your average customer's voice. Yes, they need you to communicate in a way they understand. Of course, you want them to like you, but they don't need you to be just like them. So I would say don't feel pressured to use jargon or another kind of language that doesn't add any substance to your content and that doesn't feel honest for your company just because that's popular in a particular industry. So I think honesty is the best policy here. Your voice should reflect real people behind your company, and that's how you connect with readers and customers. You know, your customers use your product for a reason, and your potential customers should use your product for a reason. You know what that reason is, and that's what you should tap into when you're writing, because the fact of the matter is you already have common ground with your audience. So I think that's a good place to come from.
That's awesome. So I have two more questions for you. I have actually loads of questions I'd love to ask you, but I'll limit it down to just the two. So in a nutshell, what do you say startup founders can learn from MailChimp's copy?
These questions are always a little bit hard to answer when you're talking about your own work. But let's see. I hope that people can learn from us that copywriting is more fun and it's better for everyone when it comes from a place of honesty. Our public personality and our voice really does reflect our culture, and it reflects our CEO Ben's sense of humor and the way we treat each other here at the office. And that makes my job easier. It makes it a whole lot more fulfilling. And I hope it feels right for our customers, because, you know, they're the reason we come to work every day, you know, and they deserve thoughtful, you know, and respectful copy.
That's great. That, I mean, it clearly comes through in your copy that you guys feel that way, which is, you know, awesome for building likability and trust and all of the great things that help, you know, lead to conversions and, you know, retention and people talking about your company and loving you. So awesome. So one final question. What one thing do you totally love about working for MailChimp?
That's a fun question. Well, I love so many things about working at MailChimp, but let's see, we are in the middle of a redesign right now, and I've just been feeling especially grateful for the team I work on. I'm on the creative team, and there are maybe 10 or 12 of us, so I work with different designers and developers and researchers and marketing people, and I am just so inspired by my coworkers every day. We've all been working a lot as we prepare for this launch we have coming up, and we've just had so much fun, and we have a lot of respect for each other. So I think that's, you know, something I'm really loving right now. I'll tell you what, it's a challenge and a joy to work with people who are smarter than you. I highly recommend it.
Agreed. Always the best way to go. Okay, well, it's been really, really awesome talking to you. I'm sure everybody's going to get tons of value out of this. So thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today, your expertise. It's fantastic. Is there anywhere that people can find you online if they wanted to follow you and get more great insights from you?
Sure. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Kate Kiefer, and usually I post links to things I've written and new stuff we've got going on at MailChimp there.
That's awesome. Okay, that's
Thanks
great.
For having me. So fun, Joanna.
Thank you. It's been super fun for me. Thanks, Kate.